break up. Now every day I wake up, somebody got a problem with hope.
You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Squeaky Curd, a food show coming to you from CGLO, where we examine our relationship with food here in Montreal. I'm your host, Gwen Rowley. I'm a journalism grad student at Concordia, and I am not a food expert. I just like to eat. Today, we're going to be looking at urban agriculture in Montreal, who some of the urban farmers and cultivators are in the city, what issues urban agriculture attempts to address when it comes to food security, and the emotional fulfillment people seem to get out of growing their own food. If you're a fan of the show and have been listening since the first episode on food security, you may remember the mention of urban agriculture as one of the ways we could be combating food insecurity. After hearing this, I had a lot of questions about what the ecosystem of urban agriculture looks like in Montreal and how it evolved over the years. This is what we're going to be exploring today. But to start off, what is urban agriculture? The easy answer is that it's the cultivation of food in an urban environment. But as I was doing research for this episode, I realized that this broad definition actually makes things a bit more complicated. If you've grown a flat of microgreens in your apartment window, which, not to brag, I've done, does that mean you have participated in urban agriculture? I talked to Laurence Fautou of Grand Potager to learn more.
Okay, so my name is Laurence Fautou. I'm the director at Grand Potager, and I like to use the pronouns she, her to describe myself.
Grand Potager is an urban agriculture co-op in Verdun that hosts other urban agriculture projects and organizations and provides resources to Montreal citizens in their agricultural endeavors. Here's what Laurence had to say when I asked her to define urban agriculture.
So at first, I was thinking urban agriculture is anything that produces plants that are edible or that produce edible stuff. Like, you know, that's urban agriculture. But then, you know, soon after that was launched, because like before, like I would say in the beginning, for me at least, it was urban agriculture is collective gardens, is community gardens, is people growing plants for their own food consumption. But then very soon after, bees came along, mushrooms came along, chickens came along. Oh, we realized that biodiversity, medicinal plants, you know, all these other stuff that are part of health, that are part of like, and then urban agriculture itself, it's more than just providing food for people. It's providing a beautiful space. It's being able to take care of your own local environment. It's being able to connect to nature. All these things are part of urban agriculture. And depending who you ask, you know, they will have different aspects of urban agriculture that are more important to them. And that's what will define their definition. And also one thing that has made my definition of urban agriculture even less clear, if I would say, in the past years, is we have a lot of people also who just want to grow plants. That's it. You know, cactus plants, succulent plants, inside plants, palm trees, tropical plants. Is that agriculture? Is that urban agriculture? Do we put it in the same category as food agriculture? Like if these house plants are done in a way that provides, you know, social opportunities to teach people how to grow and take care of plants, if they're done ecologically, if they're done locally, and we avoid importing these tropical plants from all over the world, if we're able to multiply them here locally and have, you know, contributed to the economic resilience of our communities.
So, urban agriculture doesn't have to be a large community endeavor. It can just be your own personal garden that you use to sustain yourself. I also talked to Jackie Martin from City Farm School at Concordia about how she would define urban agriculture.
My name is Jackie Martin. I'm the co-coordinator at City Farm School, and I use she, her pronouns.
City Farm School is an initiative at Concordia to develop partnerships and expertise in urban agriculture on the island of Montreal with different types of training programs in urban cultivation. We'll be talking more about what they do at City Farm School later in the episode, but here's how Jackie explained her definition of urban agriculture.
When I first got involved and excited about it, I was like, urban agriculture is growing food that is like a livelihood for the person who's doing it, like growing food and selling food within your community as like being a farmer who that's their livelihood. And then over time, my definition has kind of softened and like includes a lot more aspects of our urban agriculture. Like I would definitely still say like folks who are growing plants for their livelihood in the city, it's definitely a part of urban agriculture, but it's not the only thing. I think that like anyone growing plants to sustain themselves or their communities or to learn and doing this in the city, that's all of it can be included. I think that urban agriculture is not solely like an economic or an environmental or a social activity. Well, basically that it can be any of those things at the same time, or your project can be directed more towards one or more towards another. So I see it as a really multifaceted endeavor that like people have a lot of choice and freedom as to how they want to participate in it and still be considered part of that community.
One of the things Jackie underlined when we were talking was thinking about the work that goes into growing food and then being able to make a connection to the prices we pay for food in grocery stores and the sometimes extremely low wages farm workers are paid. In particular, thinking of the practice of migrant workers and the cheap imports we buy in grocery stores. For example, once you have experienced months of caring for a cabbage, starting seeds indoors in March to planting them outside in April, keeping them healthy and the bugs away until you harvest the plant in July, it does beg the question, how did I only pay $2 for this in the grocery store?
When we live in the city, we're physically and sort of like, we're definitely physically removed from the places where most of our food is grown, but we're also like in our mental space, we're removed from that too. We don't really have an understanding of what a farm looks like, or how, what does a farmer even look like? Like we have ideas of what a farmer looks like a old white man with a pitchfork, but having those spaces in the community, in the city where lots of people can see them, one like kind of puts us in touch with, I wouldn't say it doesn't give us all, like it doesn't give a fully clear picture of what it is that like someone who lives outside of the city who farms for their livelihood, what their life is like, but it does give us a glimpse into that.
Laurence agreed that while urban agriculture is a great way to connect personally with your food, there needs to be a greater discussion that it starts that interrogates our food system outside of the production of individual sustenance.
You know, we need farmers who are not urban to do that. We need to support those farmers that are outside the cities, to give them access and tools to fight for their land and fight to be organic and fight to get grants to support small local farmers. You know, we need to support those. I don't think that urban agriculture will solve those issues, but it's part of the discussion.
Laurence tries to further this discussion with her team at Grand Potager and the other organizations that are a part of the co-op. Here's how Grand Potager hopes to achieve that mission.
Our mission is to use the Verdun municipal greenhouses and to revitalize them, to offer opportunities, educational opportunities for citizens, but also to use the space to develop urban agriculture in Montreal by helping projects develop their own projects of urban agriculture. And how do communities, well, how do members of the community get involved? For now, it's there's still some possible opportunities that will be coming up. You know, we're a very small organization. We're only 4 years old, and we're still trying to, you know, kind of organize and structure ourselves. So far, we've had some volunteering opportunities, whether it would be for helping us, you know, at certain moments of the year, like, for example, in the spring where we need help to seed plants or take care of plants. Sometimes we need help for organizing events. Sometimes we need help for maintaining the gardens outside. So those are opportunities to get involved. Or if people have projects that they want to, you know, they want to realize in the greenhouses, they can always submit a project, and then the board of directors will analyze every project. And every year we choose new ones, and we try to have a rotation of projects within the greenhouse. So there are some opportunities right now, but we're really hoping to develop that aspect to really, you know, allow everybody who wants to get involved to find ways to contribute to the project and use this wonderful, unique space in Montreal.
I asked Laurence if, since they're based in Verdun, whether their services were more localized to that borough. She said that just because of resources and the relative short time the co-op has been operating, that is mostly the case. But she doesn't want this to be something that stops people from across the island of Montreal from seeing what the co-op has to offer.
Well, like I said, we're 4 years old, so we're still very young. And at this point in our development, I would say we are kind of very Verdun focused, just because the greenhouses, you know, they were built in the 1930s. They've been there in the Verdun landscape for such a long time, and it was never, ever open to the public. So for a while, the city was using it to do their own plans for the landscaping of Verdun. And then some people would have access to the greenhouse because there were like a horticultural club that was based there. But, you know, it was very like specific, kind of like closed on itself, I would say, or only for a lucky few to have access to the greenhouse. And then after that period, for a long time, I'd say for at least 10 years, the greenhouses were actually used as a warehouse because the city had no use for the greenhouse anymore. So they were using it as a storage space. You know, and then the citizens, I think, who, because the greenhouses are located right in the middle of a beautiful park where there's like bike paths and a lot of joggers. So citizens would go around that building every day and wonder why, you know, what's going on in there? How come there's no plants growing in there? Who's using it? Who does it belong to? And so I think that for the Verdun citizens, it's definitely kind of a secret or a mystery, or like a magical almost thing that people want to use, that people don't want to see go to waste. And then Grand Potager came at the right moment because we proposed a project to the borough, you know, to say we would like to use it for to do all these activities. Would you lend it to us for a while so we can, you know, see what happens? And then I think that, you know, the citizens are really right now, they feel like this is an opportunity for them through Grand Potager to kind of reclaim that and maybe make it a citizen space.
Laurence is also the vice president of Cultiver Montréal, another organization on the island that centralizes resources for urban agriculture. Cultiver Montréal is a nonprofit which is dedicated to supporting all forms of urban agriculture, with their centerpiece being the annual Festival Cultiver Montréal, which takes place every May. There's a huge calendar of outdoor and online events this year taking place in each and every borough.
So the Festival Cultiver Montréal is going to take place all during the month of May.
Okay.
So there's events on the May 1st, May 5th, May 7th. That's it. Everybody, every organization from every borough is contributing to this calendar. So on the Facebook page, I think, or maybe even on the on the website of Cultiver Montréal, there's going to be the calendar. You can see all the Zoom workshops that are offered, all the conferences, all the roundtables, all the seed fairs, all the seedling fairs, you know, all the free compost distributions, all the resources that are shared. So depending on your neighborhood, you can see who's organizing what. And the cool thing about being virtual is that all of a sudden you can have access to maybe workshops that are not in your neighborhood, but now you can connect online and have access and discover the urban agriculture projects of other, you know, other NGOs that are not in your neighborhood. So it's really great.
Collaboration is key when it comes to urban agriculture in a city like Montreal. Not only are there centralized places for resources like Grand Potager and Cultiver Montréal, other organizations under and around these co-ops and nonprofits assist each other and coordinate with individuals who might be trying to get involved in urban agriculture for the first time, or with food banks to allocate fresh produce to people who might be experiencing food insecurity.
So the current Montreal ecosystem in terms of urban agriculture, it's funny because you have, I think, a bunch of players who have been there for a long time, who have been fighting the fight for a long time, trying to convince people and, you know, and municipal leaders that urban agriculture is important, that it could contribute to so much development, community, social, economic. So you've had these people who are really invested in the grassroots movements of urban agriculture. And then you have a lot of new people who are like, wow, I want to do a project. I want to launch a business of urban agriculture. I want to build a business of urban agriculture. And these are really people who are geared toward making like projects that are economically sustainable and that can, you know, contribute to society in a different way. And right now I feel like, you know, there's definitely a rise of the economic actors who want to develop that sector of activity. And I so support them, because if we have strong urban agricultural businesses, that is great. But my hope would be that we can communicate better these two worlds, because I think that people who want to launch businesses of urban agriculture, it's because they care about the environment. It's because they care about, you know, food, and they care about food security, and they want to make sure that, you know, we have food sources over here that can support local communities in case there's another COVID and then we're all stuck with no stores or no cars or no transportation or whatever. Like, all these things are great, but I think that, like, there's a lot of people who have been there for a long time that see all the other aspects of urban agriculture. And I just want the urban agriculture movement to not become just a new sector of activity.
When we come back from the break, we'll be exploring the community of urban agriculture in Montreal a little bit more by looking at some of the different agricultural projects happening in the city. We'll also be taking a look at fitting Montreal's ecosystem of urban agriculture into a larger context by comparing it to other cities and how it can be used as a tool to tackle food insecurity. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hello, and welcome back to The Squeaky Curd. Today, we're looking at urban agriculture in Montreal, and before the break, we tried to pin down a definition of what urban agriculture is and took a look at some of the more centralized urban agriculture organizations, Grand Potager and Cultivé Montréal. Now, we're going to be taking a look at some of the other players that make up the ecosystem of urban agriculture in Montreal and how that community aligns with the greater picture of urban agriculture in our world today. To start off, I spoke with Sean Manning of Urban Seedling, a landscaping business which is part of the Grand Potager Co-op and assists with the building of individual gardens in the city.
Yes, my name is Sean Manning. I'm he, him. I am co-owner of Urban Seedling. I am one of the owners. My wife, Tereska Guessing, is another owner, and my cousin Trevor Manning. So we are a small family business doing big things. We have been in urban agriculture and in for the last 10 years in Montreal. So we're an urban agriculture company. We do installations. I run a garden center dedicated to edibles, and we do edible landscaping and more.
Please also enjoy the bit of bird song in the background of Sean's interview. He talked to me on the phone while he was on site for a job, and I feel like it was very appropriate. Here he is talking more about what it is Urban Seedling does.
But we build raised bed organic vegetable gardens. Well, okay, so the garden isn't organic. The soil that we use is organic, and the seedlings that we use are the seeds and the soil and all the fertilizers and everything are organic. We're technically not a certified organic company, but all of the products that we use are certified organic. So let's just clarify that. So we started having to do landscaping, basically started to do traditional landscaping after about 2 years of doing the vegetable garden installation stuff, which I'll touch on later. But we needed to increase our revenue so we could keep people working and pay rent. And I have some experience in landscaping and doing that with my family and my uncle. when I was younger. And so we started doing that. Now, when we go and do landscaping, we can do the traditional stuff. So we'll do a little bit of Unistone and we'll do, you know, flower beds and lawns, but we'll always encourage people and sort of, you know, open their eyes to the inclusion of more eco-friendly lawn coverings and edibles everywhere. So, you know, planting dwarf, easy maintain, easily maintainable fruit trees, incorporating berries and bushes, nuts, edible flowers, and fresh herbs that can be beautiful and incorporated into a traditional landscape.
I was trying to stay away from the pandemic angle as much as possible during this story, but it is kind of undeniable that urban agriculture has seen a boom because of the extra amount of time that some people have to stay at home. Sean also mentioned an increased interest in delivery farm baskets from places like Lufa Farms in Montreal. But as we talked about in our previous episode on food security, the interest in urban agriculture has also been piqued because of the faults the pandemic has revealed in the food supply chain. Here's Sean talking a little bit more about the shift his business has seen since the start of the pandemic.
Well, like every industry that is still operating, and especially anything that has to do with outdoor living, it has been insane. Not only has it been insane in that people are like, our seed sales and our online store were just like through the roof compared to any other year before. It was impossible to get seeds. Soil prices have gone up. Compost prices have gone up. My wood prices have almost doubled. Our steel prices that were like every raw material that goes into our vegetable gardens, the price has almost doubled. So not only are people more interested in it, but it is, you know, again, with supply and demand, the more people want it, the more it's costing us, which is crazy. So it's had a huge impact on many levels. So people are more into it. Everybody wants to grow. And also all of the materials that go into the gardens are more expensive. So especially like with the way that we do our gardens and raised beds, it has become, it's just more expensive. But it's really, you know, the interest has grown exponentially, and I'm really happy about that. And then, you know, there's so many people that are trying their hand at vegetable gardening and doing it for the first time because they're home and they have time. And especially last year where everything was locked down and there were a lot of people that weren't working, and they just were like, okay, well, I'm going to build a deck and build a fence and build a vegetable garden. Let's do it. Big effect.
I also wanted to get Sean's take on about how the relationship between the different urban agriculture projects has been evolving over the past few years, pandemic notwithstanding. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's really getting really good. I think that more and more, like when we started Urban Seedling, there was not a lot. There were people doing things, but it wasn't very, you know, they weren't really working together. There was a lot of perhaps like smaller things that were not necessarily getting much traction, and were probably not very well regarded by the city, and or, you know, validated as being like, you know, something credible. Whereas now more and more, the city is getting into using and incorporating edibles. There are more and more gardens going in at all the schools. I've probably put gardens in at like 100 schools and daycares in the city. And there are other, you know, companies that are doing just as much. So I think it's amazing. And I think that between the different, you know, organizations, whether it's nonprofits or small businesses, I think that there's a pretty good cohesion. People are working together.
Another member of the Montreal urban agriculture community is Amidou Horticulture, which is run by Amidou Maga out of the Grand Potager greenhouse.
Well, my name is Hamidou Maga, and I'm owner at Hamidou Horticulture, which makes ethnic vegetables in Montreal.
Amidou is originally from Niger and started Amidou Horticulture as a way to cultivate some of the plants that he found difficult to find in Montreal.
Yes, the idea from Amidou Horticulture came from when I just arrived in Canada. I started to search some vegetables that I was useful and I used to cook for my kids, and didn't finding it. I thought that it would be a good idea to produce them here, and I started to produce them for myself, and I saw that I meet many people that wanted the same thing.
Once Amidou got started, he saw the project as a way to share produce, which is rare in this part of the world, with everyone in Montreal. Here he is talking about some of the plants that they grow at Amidou Horticulture.
Well, we have the baobab trees, we have the peanuts, we have the okra that is really famous among our communities. We have a spiked cucumber named Kiwano, who is originally from Kenya. We have some root vegetables like taros or inyams or malanga that are used that can be cooked as a potato.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have? We have many herbs. We also do rare herbs from West Africa. I have this kenkeliba that this is the first year that we are going to have this variety of kenkeliba. In Africa, they name it the elixir of long life.
Again, Amidou Horticulture started as a way to cultivate some of the plants from his home that Amidou wanted to share with his family, and that spirit of sharing spread to the wider community of Montreal.
Oh, I think there is really a good interactivity between the people doing agriculture in Montreal. We have the chance to have each year some events in which all of us come to the events and meet each other as we meet the clients too. We have some many collaboration, and one good example is that now here I am in my greenhouse at Verdun, and this greenhouse is shared by 40 organisms. So this is really the proof that everybody is connected in the urban agriculture, and this is really interesting to exchange, to have some idea that we can share, have some resources that we can share. It's always better when you make an event or want to do something.
Not only is there this sharing of resources, but to have a continuously flourishing ecosystem of urban agriculture in a city, there needs to be a sharing of knowledge as well. Grand Potager, Cultivé Montréal, Urban Seedling, and Amidou Horticulture all share knowledge by teaching people about how to grow their own plants and what kind of plants they grow. Another place that is sharing knowledge about urban agriculture is City Farm School at Concordia. We already met Jackie at the beginning of the episode, but here she is talking a little bit more about what it is that City Farm School does.
Sure. So City Farm School is a training program in urban agriculture. So we run a number of different programs. There's been different programs we've offered through the years, like beekeeping or schoolyard gardening, crop planting, that are ones that have kind of come and go. But the mainstays of the program have been the market gardening program, where people come and learn with us for a whole season how to grow like an urban farm and sell their produce. And the other one is the medicinal plants program. And that is very similar, where people spend a whole season with us growing in the garden while at the same time learning body systems, the terminology that's involved in herbalism, how to use the plants, how to transform the plants, and so on and so on. That's our main programs. And the reason we do this is our goal is to contribute to a resilient community. Basically, we believe that through knowing how to grow your own food and knowing how to like grow and make medicine, that that gives resiliency to a community, and it gives people who participate in those practices a real sense of autonomy, which for us is incredibly important given the sort of instability of the environment that we live in right now, be that like social changes, climate changes, the pandemic, like that's our reason for doing it. So we find that like through like building resiliency and learning these skills, not only do like individuals feel pride and autonomy, that then they're better able to like contribute to their community in a positive way and like make the entire community stronger by having more people know how to do these things.
I asked Jackie what some of her favorite parts were about the programs at City Farm School, and here's what she had to say.
Well, like my favorite thing every year in City Farm School is, so all of the students who do the Market Gardener program go through the whole season with us, like learning how to garden and sort of receiving information and being taught. But by the end, in the last like few months of it, they're all required to teach themselves. So they have to do a workshop that is like presented, and it's free and it's open to the public. And I love that part. I love like watching folks who at the, like in the interview in the beginning, I'll like ask them, is there anything that you have concerns about? And 50% of the people are like, I don't want to do the workshop. I don't want to teach. I didn't come here to teach. But by the end, it's always fine. Like it's always fine. They've always learned something that they are like proud of and they want to share.
We also talked a little bit about how things have had to adapt for the pandemic.
We took a part of the program that we normally offer, which would be like growing seedlings, and we've figured out how to do it online. And that has been really successful and actually really fun. And it like addresses a need that we didn't address before. So basically how this program works, well, how it used to work is people would come to the greenhouse and we would grow seedlings together. They'd come once a week and there'd be like a lesson and then hands-on working with the seedlings and growing those up. This year, what we did instead is created kits for everyone who's in the program. So it's like a big box and it has soil and compost and seed and pots and fertilizer and potting mix and like spray bottle, and everybody takes it home. And then we sign on to Zoom together. And I give instructions from my office at home on what to do with all those materials. And we grow them together. So it means that all these people who normally would have been coming to the greenhouse and working with us there in the past, they were coming to the greenhouse and learning these skills and then try to translate that into their home environment most of the time. And it's not a seamless transition. The greenhouse is a greenhouse and your home is not a greenhouse. So now this year, with everybody actually working in their home, it allows like me to say like, people can take the video and say like, look at this plant that I'm growing. Like what's happening? What's going on? What do you think? Look at my setup. How are my lights? This is the humidity. And so it actually allows us to help people set up in their homes very effectively. Whereas in the past, you would be in the greenhouse and people would be trying to describe their setups at home. And I'm like, I can't. I don't know.
So even in the isolation of the pandemic, people are still trying to foster that feeling of community when it comes to cultivating in an urban environment.
It feels very much like a community. Like it really feels like everyone is supporting each other. And like you'll give, if someone contacts you and they're looking for a service, without hesitation, you'll recommend somebody else. It's very collaborative and not competitive, I would say. Like between the different organizations. I think there's a lot of compliments.
So is this something that exists in other cities, or is Montreal unique in this way? Here's what Jackie had to say.
Montreal has had a really long history of urban agriculture compared to other places, where it's like we've had our collective gardens and community plots where like individuals can like get a plot in the city. That's something that has been in Montreal for a really, really long time and doesn't necessarily exist in other places. So that means that like, aside from like the organizations and like the not-for-profits and or small companies that work together, there's also just a lot of people in the city who have access to a garden or know somebody who has access to a garden. So as far as gardening knowledge goes, there's quite a bit of skill demonstrated in public places here. So you get a lot of sharing going on and a lot of visibility for urban agriculture.
But of course, urban agriculture is something that exists in other cities. It's just given the nature of localization that is inherent to urban agriculture, it is difficult sometimes to draw the line between projects that are happening in other places. But the issues that urban agriculture is tackling, like food security and sustainability, do seem to be universal. It's just that some locations have different ways of approaching them.
I think that maybe in the States, it's a little different. Like I know a couple examples of like, for example, Detroit, who was having a really hard time economically and socially for a while, and they really used urban agriculture as a springboard to get people together, and to build community again and stronger communities. So, and I know, like, for example, Louisiana, also like New Orleans after the Katrina, you know, they also use urban agriculture to kind of reclaim dead spaces or destroyed spaces. So sometimes when I hear about that, or even worldwide, you know, just the fact that, for example, Cuba, I know the example of Cuba, they use urban agriculture in such an empowering way. And it's interesting to see how they integrate it in the social structure of their whole country versus we tend to use it sometimes as a hobby. For them, it's really part of like things that citizens do to contribute to society. It's really amazing. So I think the examples that I know, for example, are Cuba for sure, and Detroit also, all the projects that happened. But apart from that, I guess, yeah, maybe it would make me feel better sometimes to go and explore other inspiring projects worldwide, because I know there are so many.
One of the challenges that we haven't really mentioned yet, but that all urban cultivators will be facing in the coming decades that Sean pointed out, will be climate change. As the start of the growing season becomes more temperamental and the summers get hotter and hotter, it will become difficult to plan out the best way to set up all types of agricultural projects.
The irregularity of our weather, I think, is going to just maybe change our what we can grow and how we can grow it and the seasons. So we'll probably be changing the types of things that we grow, probably change when we grow them, finding ways to optimize spaces, working the best thing would be to get the city more involved and working with the city to have more resources available to people that are wanting to grow and finding ways to incorporate edibles into the parks and things like that, I think would be really, really, really great. But there's a lot of resistance on things like that, because oftentimes fruit plants and fruit trees require maybe more maintenance and more TLC than like an oak tree or a maple tree.
One challenge that urban agriculturalists in Montreal are trying to tackle is food insecurity.
Well, you know, I think that urban agriculture, the idea of food sovereignty, food citizenship, food justice, like it's a really super interesting question. You know, all these terms versus food security, you know, it's not just about producing tomatoes and then giving them to people who need tomatoes. It's like really, you know, talking about food and access to food and quality of food and being able to have agency, you know, in producing your own food or in choosing to eat what you want to eat.
We've been hinting throughout the episode about how having the control to produce your own food can be a way to achieve food security through urban agriculture. But as Laurence pointed out, sometimes there's a lack of access and time that makes it untenable to add daily care for your own garden to your life. This is again where the collaborative aspect of urban agriculture comes in. Here's Sean talking about the introduction of collaborative projects to help reduce food insecurity in the West Island.
We've been doing a lot of gardens where all the food is being donated directly to to a mission. So there's and mainly one. So there's a West Island mission in operating in like Dollard or Pierrefonds. It's up by, anyway, they feed, I think it's close to 100 plus families. I'm not going to get into those details, but what I know about is we've built gardens in about 6 or 7 different companies, and a lot of gardens, and we've been planting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of square feet of raised bed gardens, and all the food is being donated, and I think it's really cool. And so the companies will actually pay for the gardens, and then between volunteer hours at the businesses and the mission and us, we take care of and harvest, and they get all the food gets harvested and brought to the West Island mission, and then the food is distributed, and they do transformation, and you know that the people are getting to eat fresh food.
And again, this sharing of knowledge also has to be supplemented by a sharing of resources.
That we did a delivery of 1,500 packages to residents in Ville-Saint-Laurent. So the borough of Ville-Saint-Laurent decided to launch a program where they were going to donate a tomato, a cucumber, some beans, and a strawberry plant to residents. And within, I believe it was 1 hour, all of them sold out. And then we grew all the seedlings and delivered the 1,500 packages directly to people's doors. And that was pretty cool. So I would say that, and we're trying to do a bunch more of that kind of thing with different boroughs, all over the city this year.
Amidou agreed that providing people with different ways of accessing nutritious food was one of the important outcomes of urban agriculture, but also pointed out that cultivating your own food and knowing where your food comes from can also have a positive mental health impact.
Oh, there are so many values. Let's talk first for the quality of the food that the people can have. You can never have a higher level of nutrient in a vegetable as if you have it really near. You just cut it from the tree when it is ready. This is the point that it has the more nutrients, the more taste. So first thing is proximity. The second thing is about the fuel and the money and the carbon that can be spread to bring some vegetable from so far places. As we have some place, by the time we have some sun, we can do it. We can do a part of it here. I don't think that urban agriculture sometimes can sustain all the city, but in some point, in some aspect, in you know, some greens, some vegetable easy to grow can be provided by the people or the people, the farmer near the people. So this is the second point. The third point is that you have people feel better when they are in some places that are green. People want their children or themselves when they go out to be able to take a pear from a tree and show it to their kids. So for the mental stability of the people, I think it is really a good asset too.
When we come back from the break, we'll be exploring how urban agriculture affects the mental health of individuals and communities and addressing the question of space in the city for urban gardens. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. That should be it. What you eat don't make me. Where's the love? You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hello, and welcome back to The Squeaky Curd. Today, we're looking at urban agriculture, and in the previous two segments, we looked at what urban agriculture is and how it is practiced in Montreal. One of the things that comes up a lot with urban agriculture that we haven't really touched on is space. All of this growing has to happen somewhere, and it needs to be in a place where plants will have access to enough light, soil, and water.
Well, if we're going to be, if we want our cities to become, to integrate urban agriculture projects and practices, I think like fighting for space is definitely a huge one. Space in the city is extremely expensive because of speculation, because of the prices, you know, that are rising everywhere for so many different reasons. How do you make a community garden, you know, how do you make that part, you know, how do you give land to that when you know that this land, this space, this tiny little concrete space is worth so much to like an entrepreneur or like a builder or something. So that's definitely a challenge.
Again, Laurence drew on urban agriculture in Cuba and used them as an example of how you can use whatever space you can find to start growing.
Some were like huge, you know, huge farms like being cultivated by like this one person or this one group of people, and then they would produce food on the on this plot of land that was between two big buildings, you know, probably super valuable, but the society there viewed that part to be able to have a plot of land that is productive in the middle of the city. They saw it as a useful thing to be able to feed the school nearby, the hospital nearby, to be able to sell to citizens nearby, to be able to buy the produce, the resources that the people needed to maintain the garden. Like it, it's Cuba is a wonderful example that of how urban agriculture can have a place, you know, in our societies.
The people that I talked to for this story did advocate for urban agriculture as a way to interrogate our food system, but they also said they hoped that by separating themselves from the larger food system, they would find a way to connect more locally and individually with the food they eat. Here's Laurence talking about her hope for the future of urban agriculture in Montreal.
The future of urban agriculture in Montreal would be, I think for me, a place where like every citizen, like every single citizen has some urban agriculture in their life. So that ties into the, you know, very complex and wide open definition of what urban agriculture is. It could be like having access to local produce. It could be having a garden at your school, at your daycare. It could be having access to produce that is produced on the roof of your company if you're like a worker in a big company. It could be like having a farmer's market being set up next to your place. I feel like that's my vision. Developing any, all kind of projects to really reach out to everybody, every different person. That would be my dream.
Here's Sean talking about how he sees the self-fulfillment of urban agriculture.
Well, for me, it's such an enriching thing for the individual that's doing it. That's to me the best thing about it. The food is almost, and there are certain circumstances where it is actually having a real impact on food security, and that's different. But when we talk about the home garden, it has, you know, there are circumstances where people are growing really, really a lot, and then it has more of an impact on their personal food security. But that's not really the definition of, like, when I think of food security, I think of it affecting really maybe more people. But the vegetable garden itself or growing food is such an enriching thing on a personal level and on an emotional level. And it really gives us as people a feeling of pride and a feeling of accomplishment and a feeling of like a boost to our confidence. To be able to grow your own food is really like a base human instinct. And when we do it, we feel damn good about it. And we can't stop talking about it. And we can't stop sharing our experience and our successes and our failures. And the food is almost like the bonus.
It's not only about that personal, individual fulfillment. This is an activity they want people to engage in with their families, with their communities, as a way to bring people closer together.
There's often like a focus on the younger generations, like the youth or the seniors. Mm-hmm. And with the youth, it's more like what I was explaining before, like getting them in touch with, so that like they know what a carrot looks like growing in the ground, and then cooking skills and pride and like learning pride in growing something and cooking something and preparing food for your family or your community, which I think is really important that young people have that understanding and respect for that. I've definitely seen it in the garden where we've had like groups of young people come to have a garden tour, and like you'll go around and be like, okay, do you know what this plant is, or what vegetable? And when I pull out a carrot, like I've seen children actually like scream in disbelief. They like had no idea. They're like, ah. And then some of them are super brave and they'll like, you just hose it off and they'll take a bite. And other ones are kind of like, I don't want to eat carrots ever again. I didn't know they lived in the ground.
And this goes both ways, not just focusing on younger generations, but older generations as well, in the hopes of bringing everyone in the neighborhood or community together to have a better understanding of where their food comes from.
But it's also like a really great way to like connect with the older people in the neighborhood that maybe you don't have that much else in common with, except for your gardening, and you share skills and get to know each other. So I think that in the garden, like everybody is welcome. Everybody is always there. So I think one of the big things is it draws people in and conversations start, and that like bridges isolation and leads to sort of greater social harmony and understanding. In other ways too, like if a community doesn't have enough access to fresh foods and they live in like a so-called food desert, this is very empowering. It's like they don't have to be reliant on like purely economic means for food or from other organizations, is that they can learn fairly quickly how to grow at least some food for themselves. So it gives a sense of autonomy there as well. Where's the love?
Thank you for listening to The Squeaky Curd. Today's episode wouldn't have been possible without the participation of Laurence Fautou, Sean Manning, Amadou Maga, and Jackie Martin. You can learn more about the Grand Potager at grandpotager.ca or visiting their location at Boulevard La Salle in Verdun. Learn more about Urban Seedling at urbanseedling.com and Amadou Horticulture at amadouhorticulture.com and the Concordia City Farm School at cityfarmschool.com. Le Festival Cultivé Montréal is going on for the entire month of May. To learn more about online events or COVID-safe events happening in your neighborhood, visit cultivemontréal.ca. Our show logo and illustration were designed by Christina Rivera. Please join us next time as we look at the concept of food deserts in Montreal. From Gwen Rowley, you're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal.